Good morning and happy Thursday to you, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for joining us and being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the Twitter machine, the email account, and all the other ways we have to communicate. If you are going to call, and we hope you will call in the course of the next 54 minutes or so, 414-1234 is the local number. If long distance, it's 800-926-8809. You can send us an email, perspectives@WFSU.org, or a tweet at WFSU Perspective. Now, what we are going to be doing over the next couple weeks, actually, we're finalizing it right now, and we'll be dropping the exact date of release on you folks a little bit later on. But we are going to, through our morning edition programming, be featuring a series of special reports on the integration of Leon County's public school system. And one of the reporters who's been working on that series is our own Kate Payne. She'll be sharing some of her insights gleaned from her reporting on the issue this morning. Good to see you, Kate.
Yes, thanks so much for having me in.
Also with us this morning, there were a total of 32 black Leon County students who attended formerly all-white schools by the fall of 1965. And we'll talk about this protracted timeline over the course of the next hour, which is surprising to a lot of folks that desegregation was not an instantaneous event in Leon County or elsewhere. It took a long time. But among those folks who came into formerly all-white schools by the fall of 65 was Clarence Williams III, but all of his friends know him as Rick, now an administrator in the very school system he helped transform back then. Mr. Rick Williams joins us by telephone. Sir, it is so good to have you on the air.
Well, thank you.
Let's go back to that time here before we get into that long time frame and what led up to it and all that. Take us back to September of 1965. What was that like for you?
Well, it was different. There were only three black students entering the school at that time. I was entering as a junior. And one of the guys was entering as a 10th grader, and another was entering as, I think it was either 8th or 9th grader. And it wasn't an introduction or anything. I just went in, registered, and they walked me down to a classroom, which happened to be a social studies classroom. And when I opened the door, the teacher looked at me and said, "Whoa, you wait outside for a minute while I talk to my class." And after that, I went in and started my class.
Wow.
That had to be jarring for you, though, to go into just this sea of white faces at Rickards High School, which today is fully integrated and all that. But what was going on inside the gut for you at that point?
Well, number one, it was extremely uncomfortable. And as the day progressed, it got even more uncomfortable because there was some, you know, name calling going on. There was some, as you walk down the hall, some people were whispering and they'd jump off the sidewalk. It was that kind of day. I ate by myself almost all year because every time I sat at the table, you know, in the cafeteria, everybody would get up and move. So that's the kind of day it was, but it was also the kind of year it was.
Now, the other two guys, Andre Barnes and Vincent Dio, I believe, who went to Rickards with you there, did you get up with them after those initial several days particularly and just say, "My gosh, what did we get into here?"
Yeah, not really, because we didn't have any classes together. I think Vincent and I may have had a math class together because I was out of the sequence. We didn't have a whole lot of time to associate with each other because we were in different classes.
That's a lonely way to go to school.
Yeah, so, you know, so I don't have any classmates that I even deal with or know or can hardly remember.
You know, that was in September of 65. In September of 63, Leon County Public Schools were actually integrated, I think, Kay Payne, your reporting showed right there, and there were a number of folks who did that. Tell us that story, what that was.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting to look back at all of these timelines throughout the country, actually, that followed after, sometimes well after years and even a decade after, Brown versus Board of Education. So the Supreme Court ruling finding that segregated schools are separate and unequal and unconstitutional. So we did see in September 1962, Elaine Thorpe integrated the Blessed Sacrament School, which we now know as Trinity Catholic. And then, as you said earlier, Tom, it was 1963 when we saw the first three black students to enter Leon County Public Schools. And so those folks are Harold Knowles, Marilyn Hollifield, and Philip Hadley. And then also those three went to Leon High School, and then Melody Thompson entered Kate Sullivan Elementary School. But it's I think, important to recognize those people and their families' decision in order to take the initiative to enter these schools in the hopes of having a really good quality education. And I know for some of these students, the goal was college, you know, and being able to pursue higher education, law degrees, medical degrees, which they did achieve. And definitely at that time in 1963, the onus was on these families, these individual students, to take the initiative in order to get themselves into these white schools. And it was not easy. You know, the district did not set up an easier way, I suppose. The onus was on the students themselves.
Yeah, because this came a full more than 9 years after Brown v. Board of Education and the Supreme Court ruling that separate but equal was separate but certainly unequal, therefore unconstitutional, and ordered the full integration of the public education system in the United States of America. This was a long time.
It was. It really was. And I think that's something that people forget. And certainly for folks of my generation, I actually am a product of Leon County Public Schools, went through this system. And, you know, thinking back to how I learned and was taught about desegregation, you know, it's easy to see the Norman Rockwell painting of Ruby Bridges entering school as a very young girl, or thinking to Little Rock, you know, in the stand down at the schoolhouse door, and these really at times very violent, aggressive conflicts at those first days, first hours of students coming in. But it really, the process did not end there. Those students absolutely blazed away for those who followed, but we really start to see a lot of cultural, substantive changes come later in the process as more and more black students began to intermingle with more and more white students. And so here in Florida, what we saw, there are a number of ongoing court cases around this, trying to implement Brown v. Board and in a way that was actionable and deliberate. But it was in 1966, December of 1966, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals made their ruling. And the case was U.S. versus Jefferson County Board of Education. And the court found that the districts did have an affirmative duty to break up historical patterns of segregated school facilities. And so it was that case that really spurred full desegregation. And in Leon County, that looked like what's called a freedom of choice plan. And so in that situation, every student in the district could apply to any school. So still, you're seeing the onus is still on the students, you know, to get that form, to fill it out on time, and to get it in. But that's when we started to see real waves of students integrate. And so some of the numbers there, I think we mentioned before, in 1966, about 2% of the black student population was enrolled in white schools in Tallahassee. But during the 1967-68 school year, we saw in Tallahassee and also across the state, more black children and white children were in schools together than ever before. You know, something like 71% of all students were in integrated schools statewide. And so that's a huge change.
Well, Mr. Williams, what kind of discussion went on in your household there prior to that fateful morning in September of 65 when you made the that trek over there to Rickards?
Well, the conversation was pretty straightforward. My father was my father simply said that, you know, we waited and fought too long for this opportunity. And, you know, then we're going to take advantage of it. And, you know, and he didn't have to go into, you know, I'll support you and all of that, because he always did. So it was pretty much mom and dad saying this is what we're going to do. And, you know, coming up, when they said this is what you're going to do, this is what you did. So.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly a democratic process, it sounds like, huh?
No, no. A lot of things were not democratic in my household. But, you know, that's the way, you know, we were brought up. There was, you know, some things you discussed and some things you just had to do.
Well, I wanted to find out what it was like for you before those days of making the transition to an integrated Rickards High School, or barely integrated in the case of you and Andre Barnes and Vincent Deal back there in September of 65. We'll do that on the other side of this break, which is rapidly coming up. Do you have any recollections? Do you have any thoughts on the process that led to the full integration of Leon County school system? Would love to hear from you at 414-1234 this morning on Perspectives. It's 800-926-8809 if long distance, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and this is the anniversary year, the golden anniversary year of the closing of the last exclusively African-American school in Tallahassee, Florida, in Leon County, which was the old Lincoln, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. A reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. We have recently revamped and reconfigured and made more user-friendly our website. Click on Radio, pull down the Programs menu, click Perspectives, and we archive past shows. Try to have them up within 24 hours after the program actually airs so you can go back and listen to it in perpetuity, or at least for a good long time. Rick Williams, one of the pioneers here in Leon County of school integration, and in September of 1965, he and two other gentlemen went to what was then the all-white Rickards High School for the very, very first time. Before that, Mr. Williams, where did you go to school, and what was that like?
Well, before that, it was a comfortable situation. I went to Barn Elementary School, so from there I went to NIMS. For 1 year, I was sent out of town to a co-ed boarding school called Boggs Academy, and I spent a year there because my father was not satisfied with the educational system. And when I came back from that is when I entered Rickards. So before then, it was, you know, life was pretty much normal. You know, you had your friends, and you dealt with your friends. There was very little. There wasn't a lot of interaction with the white community. So by the children. So it was life was good.
Yeah, it was a community kind of thing. Of course, having no real basis of comparison, was there any, I guess, recognition on the part of yourself or other students that maybe the facilities there at Bond and NIMS may not have been on a par with the white schools in the county?
Well, yes, because, you know, my father and my mother had indicated that, but it wasn't something that they drilled on. Basically, the problems that were discussed in our family were the problems between the races.
Okay, Kate Payne, you'd been doing some research on that in your reporting coming up on our series about the integration movement in Leon County. What did you find as far as that disparity is concerned?
Yeah. So something that we heard in particular from folks who are at the old Lincoln High School is particularly around the science classroom, and that whole classes were only able to share maybe one or two microscopes. And just understanding, you know, just not having the same amount of resources that might be available in other schools. And again, we heard, you know, the students were incredibly motivated and they did everything that they needed to do. And they sought out, you know, the education that they needed, even if they didn't have, you know, 15 microscopes or whatever it was. They sought it out. And again, these folks went on and some pursued medical degrees and they got where they wanted to go, where they needed to go. But it's interesting to look back even a little farther into Leon County's legacy of schooling disparities. And back into the 1800s, there were a number of one-room schoolhouses for Black students. And many of these were built around plantations. And so the folks who were living and working there on the plantations would build schools for themselves. And there's actually a wealth of photos, documentation of this at the State Archives that folks can look at on Florida Memory. I think it's floridamemory.com. But one of these schools, the Chair School, was, again, a one-room schoolhouse for Black students, and that was closed in 1967 with some of these other schools. And so that it's just sort of mind-boggling to think the differences there. And folks actually here in Tallahassee can go and see one of those schools, which I believe it was situated out near Miccosukee. But the school was then moved to the Tallahassee Museum. It's right there at the museum next to an old church. And you can walk in, look around, and sort of put yourself back in that situation that for some students really was not that long ago. Something, again, that we've heard as far as when these schools were closed, it was traumatic and disruptive. For not just students, but for teachers, principals, administrators as well. Speaking with Altamise Barnes with the Riley House, she recounted, you know, some principals, Black principals, who were, you know, managing their schools, public faces for their communities, in this transition would be demoted to coaches, say, and losing that status, losing, you know, basically derailing their career in some instances. And for students, I think, you know, we've heard that is disruptive as well, losing the ability to see people like them in positions of leadership and positions of power in the community.
Yeah, and Mr. Williams, was that something that you, now having been an administrator at the Leon County School District for so many years, that kind of disruption in the whole educational fabric between Black teachers and school leadership and the white community?
Well, since I've been in the Leon County school system, I think that I have seen – blacks become administrators, and blacks get into pretty powerful positions as it relates to the school system.
Sure.
If you look at our system now, in terms of administrators, we are pretty well, blacks are pretty well, well represented. Now, what's happening in the teaching profession, I think, is something that's a little bit different because so many people are choosing not to go into education now.
Mm.
So those figures are gonna be a little bit warped, I think, for a while until we can, start getting people to go in because to get a black male to go into education is almost impossible now.
Mm. Yeah, there are very, very few African-American males who are in the teaching profession. This isn't just Leon County. This is across the country, right?
Across the country, yeah. They've upped the beginning salary down in Pinellas County, St. Petersburg. They're starting teachers out at almost $70,000 a year, and they are recruiting black teachers, and especially black males. Because the guys are just not going into it because you can't support your family on the salary.
Sure. Let's go to the phones, by the way. 414-1234 is our number, talking about the anniversary of the full desegregation of the Leon County Public School System, a very, very long process, surprisingly long as we look back in history. And on line one is our friend, Dr. Edward Hollifield. Hey, Dr. Ed, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing, man?
No, could not be doing better, sir. Thank you for giving us a ring today.
Well, my point is that it's too early for people to start patting themselves on the back because the schools in Leon County are increasingly segregated. Segregation is not on the decline. The school system is becoming more and more segregated. And it's being done to a large extent through the housing patterns. Most of the low-income housing is concentrated on one side of town, namely the south side of town. And this fits into the objective, really, of keeping the schools segregated. Low-income housing should be all over the county. But you'll never see that happen because the power structure, the chamber, the leadership Tallahassee types, they will never allow it to happen. You take the Ausley Law Firm, for example, which represents the Leon County School Board now. Well, the Ausley Law Firm fought to the bitter end to keep blacks out of Leon High School. And they still represent the Leon County Schools. The Leon County School Board. So what's really changed? If you look at the federal government and this DeVos lady who came down here, where did she go? She went to Holy Comforter, one of the richest schools on the planet, and didn't do anything so far as public education is concerned. When public education, the public schools are under assault. They're being decimated. Funding is being withdrawn in favor of the charter schools. And just because a charter school exists doesn't mean it's a good school. I think Ricky Hanna should be applauded for avoiding that charade when that divorce lady came here. So we need to get serious about this. The power structure, by and large, is not in favor of desegregated schools. I got into a big argument with Whole Child Leon. They never speak out against segregated schools, at least not to my knowledge. When was the last time you heard them speak out against segregated schools or the increasing segregation in the Leon County school system? Pardon my voice, I'm losing it. But that's the reality.
Well, I'll tell you what. Dr. Ed, why don't we let Mr. Williams jump in here a little bit, and since he is, again, an administrator with the Leon County school system, he might have some insights or some thoughts on that. Mr. Williams, what do you think?
Well, hello there, Mr. Hollifield. How you doing? This is Rick Williams, your old neighbor.
Pretty good. Right? Pretty good.
Yeah. So, if you look at what he's saying, it actually kind of works like that because you are zoned according to where you stay, and like he was saying, on the south side, that's where you have your poor communities, and that's where you have your public housing, and those kids are zoned for schools in that area. So when you actually kind of step back and look at it, that happens. Now, what the legislature did this year was they put in place you have the ability to go to the school, any school you choose to. But at the same time, that you still had to go through a process to get into these other schools. And if you're looking at going to a school out of your assigned area, then that school has to be under capacity in order for you to get into that school.
Yeah, there's got to be an opening before you can make that jump then outside of your home area.
Right. That's correct.
Oh, all righty. Kay Payne, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, so this is absolutely something that we're looking at as far as the continued segregation of schools here in Leon County and across the country. We are seeing integration, the trend of integration is reversing. I think it was around 1988 was when we saw peak integration, and it's been dropping off since then to the point that ProPublica did a really great look into these issues and found that in some districts, it's almost as if Brown never happened, Brown v. Board never happened, in that the rates of segregation are very comparable as they were, you know, in the 1950s. And absolutely, neighborhood and community alignment has a lot to do with that when we are sending children to a particular school based on where they live. It's really difficult to separate what some researchers called the segregation feedback cycle. So folks living in a certain neighborhood in order to go to better schools, and that sort of feeds in on itself. For Tallahassee and Leon County in particular, according to the 2016 census data, we have about 280,000 residents in Leon County. The breakdown is about 62% white and 31% black. But for Leon County Public Schools, the numbers are different, really different. 42% white versus 43% black. In Leon County Public Schools. And so in looking at that disparity, you know, of why does Leon County Public Schools not reflect the Leon County population overall, I think it can be helpful to look back at this era of desegregation. Dr. Hollifield brought up Holy Comforter earlier. And when we look at some of these other wealthier private schools, many of them came out of desegregation. Historians call them actually segregation academies. And so for Holy Comforter, it was established in 1955, a year after Brown v. Board. North Florida Christian established 1966. So when we're seeing these changes in Leon County, McClay School in 1968, over in Gadsden County, Robert F. Monroe Private School in 1968, and then the Brookwood School in Thomasville, which serves some of the whiter, wealthier population of Jefferson County, actually, established in 1970. And so we're absolutely seeing this legacy play out in how Leon County schools and schools across the nation are functioning and their demographic breakdown even now.
And I think we have on line three someone who can bring an additional bit of information to that discussion. Reed, how you doing, sir?
Good morning, sir.
Yes, go right ahead, Reed.
I got to tell you, I really hoped that my son and daughter's generation were going to be the first since Reconstruction to not even be having this discussion. Unfortunately, I was totally, utterly wrong. Dr. Hollifield made a very valid point, but I don't think he stressed it quite enough, Tom. It comes down to money. It always comes down to money and resources and where we dedicate those resources. This school choice is being taunted on a national and state and local level as something that is good for the minority community. Well, that's just bogus. What it is, it's taking resources away from the minority community, and just as Kate said, resegregating the school system. My ex-girlfriend was a teacher here for many, many years. She taught in Gadsden County. She taught at Rickards. Virtually everybody that she taught in the public school, and I'm talking about, 70 to 80 to 90%, were on free or reduced lunch. Now, by the same token, the school next door to the neighborhood I lived in Gadsden County was just chock full of wealthy people wearing uniforms and buying pizza every day. This is a travesty, and as Dr. Holifield mentioned, the fact that Ms. DeVos came to Tallahassee and went not only to a charter school, which was developed under segregation, or to fight desegregation.
Reed, hold that thought. We'll be right back here on the other side of this break. Want to give you an opportunity to continue that thought and then get a reaction here from Mr. Williams as we continue our look at integration. A long legacy, a seismic shift, a huge change in the way of the world, civil rights and the schools, the integration of Leon County Public School, bridging that entire period between May 7th of 1954, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that state laws mandating segregation of schools were unconstitutional, all the way through September of 1970. Which was when Leon County schools were fully integrated, as per multiple court rulings and orders and all that sort of thing. Reed continues on the line with us here. Reed, wrap it up if you would, sir, please.
Yeah, real quickly, Tom. I think the indications that we saw in Charlottesville, this move to tear down Confederate monuments and the fight against that, is just indicative of the same problem that's affecting our education system.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the thoughts on that. Mr. Williams, as an administrator there in Leon County Schools, a lot to unpack, but you have such things as the mandate from the legislature that construction funds at the district level now be shared equitably, whatever that means, with charter schools and all that kind of thing. Do you perceive the same kind of thing that maybe Reed did on that?
Yeah, I think he made a couple of really valid points there. I've not been privy to a lot of the high-level conversations about that, but I'm sure that no one, especially in the public arena, public educational arena, is happy with that. Sharing of the monies with the charter schools. Now, some of your charter schools do a pretty good job. Some of them don't. And the fact that your charter schools require you to, as a person who wants to send a child to a charter school, you're required to provide your own transportation and that kind of thing. So that's kind of a disadvantage for kids dealing in a poor area.
Yeah, but because you're not going to have bus service out there, that's for sure. And Kate Payne, you did some research on that, too, when it came to some of these disparities between charters and full private and public schools.
Yeah, it can be a really difficult situation for folks. I think of Jefferson County, close by to us, where you are seeing a lot of issues with the public schools and what people are able to access in a real sense. You know, there's a lot of talk in the state capitol about the importance of school choice and the ability that parents should be able to pick their student up out of, you know, one school and send them to another if they see fit. And for people, especially in, you know, what we would think of as chronically underperforming schools, that's important. You know, you don't want to have your child stuck would be the idea. But, you know, for some folks, you know, we think of Jefferson County, they can't necessarily get their child up to Thomasville, to the Brookwood School, or, you know, maybe over to another neighboring county here in Florida, because there is no transportation. And so in that sense, do they really have a choice? I don't know. It doesn't always fit for every student and every student's real resources that are available to them. And in the meantime, you know, folks would argue when you are incentivizing families to take their children out of public schools, it just furthers the decline of that school. And the question is always, you know, how can we best help those who can't leave? Who really don't have an actionable choice to leave that public school.
Mm-hmm. And how to prevent the traditional public school system from essentially becoming the schools of last resort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Tom joins us here on line four. Hi, Tom. Welcome to Perspectives, and thank you for your patience.
Hey. Well, I would definitely be a supporter of the free choice. It seems to me that anyone who believes in free choice of whether to have a terminate pregnancy should certainly believe in free choice of where to educate the child if you do have that child. Choice is what America is all about. And to try to restrict that just seems contrary to everything that we're all about. But an interesting sideline to this is we keep talking about money and that money is education, this, that, and the other thing. A lot of research is showing that the more money, I mean, there's a sweet zone. You can go above and beyond it, and American schools seem to be in that zone now. The more money that is being spent in a lot of these schools, the less the quality of the education. And I'm actually referring to my own personal experience, and one of your callers mentioned when the schools were smaller and the focus was on the education, the attitude of the children was a lot more intense. And I've taught here in Tallahassee and elsewhere, and I've discovered that, you know, the attitude of the students is not at all like it was when they were, you know, a lot more motivated to learn. I had an experience where it was three grades shared in one room, grades one through three, 60 people in one classroom, and that was the best education I ever received with the time I was, this was an Irish school, and in Ireland. And then my wife, she was brought up in another 60 students in one classroom. It wasn't multiple grades the same way it was in my case, but it was 60 students with one teacher in one classroom. And that was a phenomenal education. So it had a lot more to do with discipline, and it had a lot more to do with motivation, motivation being provided by the parents as well as the students. And I can also tell you that the attitude now between teachers and parents has dramatically changed. Back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, it was a collaboration. If you had a gripe against a teacher, the parents always sided with the teacher because they knew the teacher was there to help your kid. Now you have teacher-student meetings, and the students are coming and arriving with lawyers. I'm not kidding. They show up with lawyers. Who were they there to argue with? The teacher? The teacher's there to help the kids. So we're going in different directions here. It's a lot more involved than just money. And I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you so much, Tom. Really appreciate the call there. And Mr. Williams, I guess you have probably seen some changes in the overall education environment, let's say, like Tom said, since the early 60s and up through today, there seems to be a little bit less collaboration between parents and students and the schools. Anything you think we can do about that?
Well, like I guess I forget his name, Tom was saying, let's look at it the other way, and let's just say that our schools would be a whole lot better if the parents were more involved with the children. And you know, when we were coming up, I don't know how old you are, but when I was coming up, it was you couldn't ever. The teacher was just never wrong. It was that never came up. You know, if the teacher saw my parents and they said something that I did that I shouldn't have done, then that was it. And when I first started teaching, all of my parents, not all of them, but the majority of them were like, "Hey, Mr. Williams, what can I do? How can I help? If I call, then it was never what he said that didn't happen. It was always, okay, I'll take care of it." We do run into a lot of situations where people are siding with the kids and wanting to know, you know, wanting to say that it was the teacher's fault. But like, I guess I want to say that everything, if you work with the instructors and you work with the administrators as a parent, then you'll have a better relationship with your child and the teacher, and I think you'll get more out of it by doing and working that way.
Sounds like sage advice. Let's lady here is on line two, who's been hanging on for quite a while. Let's see if she can still join the conversation. Yes, ma'am, go ahead. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Yes, I grew up here in Tallahassee. I also taught in the past. And I guess I'm feeling like ricochets from like different angles of this entire topic, listening to the, you know, the different callers. You know, the last caller that called in, I just feel the need to say that, and he sounded like a white male, not sure about that, but it sounded that way. And I just want to say, you know, his first comment about, you know, having free choice, you know, if he thinks that it's not about money and that money doesn't play into the choice that students have as to what school they'll attend and what resources they have, especially having been a teacher, you know, I don't think he gets it. The caller before that, I wish I heard more white men that had that outrage and that sense of, like, me for social justice that I heard in his voice, because to me, someone like that, to me, he's rare. And I guess, you know, having grown up, I guess it was like in the early 60s or the 60s, maybe the mid 60s and the early 70s when I attended elementary school here. And I think segregation, well, it must have happened before I was in first grade. But I remember still, you know, having this sense, and I'm just going to be real honest about this, that as a child, somehow I had already picked up that somehow, because I was white, I was better than the little girl sitting next to me. And I remember saying to her, and it's like, you know, I'm being very honest in saying this. Of course, I don't feel this way now, but this is what I picked up as a child. I looked at this little girl who was black, and I said, "I don't see what's wrong with you." And it reminded me when I heard Mr. Williams speaking about his experience, you know, and that racism and that I don't know if hatred's the right word, but that, you know, he said people would jump off the sidewalk and not sit with him, and you know how cruel children can be. And they learn that from their parents and from society. And so to say that, you know, that it's all about, I don't know, but it's about choice. And I mean, it is, it's complicated. I recognize that it's complicated. But, you know, the money and race, it is everything. And when I returned here to Tallahassee, I wasn't here for 20 years, and I returned here, I think I returned with a very nostalgic idea of what Tallahassee was, you know, from my perspective of having grown up here. And, you know, seeing, like, all the work that's been done through the CRA, and yet not one thing that I'm aware of has been done for the South Side, and yet that was supposed to be for blighted community. That's evidence right there that it's about race and money. And, you know, just from hearing, you know, the gentleman before whose wife was a teacher in the school here, I mean, that's evidence when certain schools that happen to be predominantly, you know, black and poor, or, you know, in the case in Central Florida, it might be Hispanic and poor. You know, it has everything to do with what they receive. And, you know, I was pulled out of Kona Brevard and sent to Blessed Sacrament. And then I remember being, Blessed Sacrament, and then I was at Robert F. Monroe School, you know, when I lived there. And then I was, like, sent down to Central Florida. And, you know, I've always had these different reasons in my mind as to why that was. And some had nothing to do with race, but I think some of it probably did.
Well, let me check in with Mr. Williams for just a moment here, ma'am, because what we've heard from a number of folks today, and I see Kate nodding her head too, is that we may be slipping in some way, shape, form, or fashion back to a not-so-desirable past life. Mr. Williams, what's your thought on that?
Well, I've been listening to everybody. We know that these different that prejudices are formed, you know, from childhood. You know what happens in your home, how your parents speak about other people and how they deal with you, and so when you start looking at that, how you can't legislate pass laws to change a person's heart, you know? And you can't pass laws and to change how a person thinks, especially if this has been ingrained in them since childhood. So, I don't know when you say, are we slipping, or has this always been there and now it's coming out? I guess that's the question.
And that's one we're still going to be wrestling with. Kate Payne, you picked up on some of these things too in your research.
Yes, absolutely. So I think a lot of these issues as far as race relations is really poignant now in the wake of Charlottesville. And it was interesting to hear some researchers come forward in the wake of those events and say, you know, now is the time to double down on sending your children to public schools. It's really interesting how that can facilitate understanding between folks. But in our research, particularly in Leon County schools, Leon High School itself has been really open and welcoming and letting us go through their own archives. And so I'm searching through, you know, old editions of the high school paper, the Leon High Life, as well as the yearbook, and was really shocked, honestly, to find how Leon High School idealized and celebrated the Confederacy up through the 1960s. It was a girls' service club, which I believe is still active at Leon High School, hosted a Confederate ball every year. And it was actually the only school dance that was open to all grade levels. And the school would rent out Confederate soldier uniforms so the boys could dress up. And then every year they would crown a Confederate general for that year. And this is up through the 1960s, the late 1960s. And it's, you know, someone we spoke with in the process of building out this series said, you know, if people really knew their history, we wouldn't have the problems that we have today. And I think that really encapsulates that history and how deeply it really can permeate students and how they grow and form beliefs about the world and other people.
And yet, as recently as just right before the close of the semester, all that kerfluffle up at Childs High School with the display of the it is the Northern Army of the Virginia battle flag. It's not the Confederate battle flag, if you want to be totally accurate about it on a historical level. Just a moment to go. CB Rick Williams, thank you so much for coming on the air with us and relaying your history, your remembrances, and your pioneering in the desegregation of Leon County Public Schools. Thank you so much for being a part of it, sir.
Okay, thank you for having me, and you both have a good day, okay?
You do the same, sir. And Kay Payne, thank you for, I am so looking forward to hearing your pieces along with the rest of our WFSU news team as we go into our complete week-long series of the history of the desegregation of Leon County schools and kind of where we are now and where we go from here. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks so much.
Perspective is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lido Rawls on the technical side today. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we recall the Vietnam War and the run-up to WFSU-TV's airing of the new Ken Burns documentary on the conflict. We'll talk with some local vets and hear your stories from that era, too, right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.